Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Is This Just Fantasy? I'm your host, Geordie Bailey.
And I'm his fantasy book addict co-host, Duncan Nicol.
I think of this one, Duncan, you're allowed to just say who you are. We're not doing a book in particular this time, we're just talking about books in general.
We are indeed. Well, not any books. We're talking about the books that we have looked at. This is a massive look back and ranking of all the fantasy books that we have covered on Is This Just Fantasy?
Yeah, a lot of grounds to cover. According to our maths, we should do this in just under 2 years. If we did one every 2 weeks, you know, it's 26 books a year. We're a little over 3 years in due to some holidays and sometimes where, like, with a book was so long, we read one in a month instead of two, like a Strange and Gnarl. But, and sometimes Geordie just picked a book that turned out it was not fantasy and he had to pay the price for that. But whatever the case, we are here now. We've done 50 books. Duncan and I have agreed that there are 50 books and we're ready to discuss them.
There's little more to be said than that. Obviously, if you're joining us for the first time, do go back and check out any of the episodes on these 50 books. If you want to know the best place to know when a new episode drops, go and follow us on Instagram. We give regular updates from whenever a new episode drops, plus little tidbits of all those extra books. You know, we've just not just read these 50 in the last 3 years. We've probably read probably closer to double that, actually.
Oh, I'd say so.
Head over there if you want to see our thoughts and opinions on other books that we don't cover in the podcast.
I'm going to tell you, actually, Duncan, maybe this is a really good episode to start, because when you think about it, we're kind of going to give minute little reviews of all the books we've covered, and if you'd like to hear us say more about a particular book, then you can jump back through and you'll know that we'll have an episode on that.
Absolutely. I mean, in many respects, a ranking is like the most minute review you can possibly give. You know, and it actually gives you a lot of information.
That's true.
You've read one book on this list, then you know that by me putting it above it, I'm saying it's better. Me putting it below it, I'm saying it's objectively worse. No two ways about it.
Objectively.
No, that's obviously not the way I do it. I don't know what your approach was, Geordie, but when I came to write my top 50,
well,
I was just like,
my original idea for this episode, Duncan, was actually to take a page out of the Mr. Sunday Movies approach and to just decide whether any book that was good is called the best book ever. And all the books that are bad are the worst book ever. But I think you would have shot down that idea.
Oh, absolutely. Because when I came to write my list, Geordie, pretty much everything past the bottom five, I wouldn't want to call a bad book. We've read a lot of really good stuff.
I'm in almost the exact same place.
I want to say now, this is my logic, my thinking for how I did this ranking. I just picked up one of the books that we'd covered and just went down the list. And as soon as I said to myself, I would prefer to reread this book over the book below it. That's why I slot it in. Like, that was the only kind of inkling I had. What would I rather, like, pick up again right now?
I'm in somewhere similar. I definitely did that thing where I'm holding it up and I'm looking down the list. Is it better than that? No. Yes. But it's hard to say where the rereadability went in, and this will come into a lot of detail when we get to the top, and I'm really struggling to decide between, but the main factor I chose, like the sort of clinch, the thing that really pushed it over, was how much of an impact it had on me. Like, did this have an emotional impact on me? Because there are a lot of books in the upper echelons, which are good, that are going to be beaten out by what are potentially lesser books, but which just meant more to me.
I think mine has muddied elements of all of that. And I think the most important thing to kind of say now is that if we were recording this tomorrow, in a week's time, this list would change. Not in huge strokes. I think, you know, the top 10 would stay the top 10. Bottom 10 would probably stay the bottom 10. But where books actually sat in those listings, I think they would shuffle for pretty much every book, apart from number 50 and number 1. They never moved.
I'm already looking at my list and being like, oh man, do I want to move that one around? But no, I stand by it. This is a definitive historical document, Duncan, and it's irrefutable!
Absolutely perfect, Geordie. So I believe how we're going to approach this, people, is that Geordie and I, we're going to take it in turns to sort of read out. I think we're going to go from 50, counting upwards. We're going to go 5 at a time?
Yes, I think that's what we agreed to. I think we should both read our bottom one. And then maybe for the actual top 5, let's take it one by one, but otherwise, yes, groups of 5.
Okay. Well, Geordie, I'm going to say take it away, but before you do, I'm just going to say this. I will happily put, and I mean happily put, some money down, a Destiny token down, one of mine, that our bottom book's the same. It's on the table.
I mean, I'm not going to take that bet and give you a precious Destiny point, because I think that's quite likely that we have the same book at the bottom. Shall we, in fact, shall we, haven't done this in a while, shall we say it at the same time?
Let's count down.
3, 2, 1.
A demon in
Jurel
silver.
Jurel of Joyry.
Oh.
Oh no, it was different.
Fair.
I'm really surprised by that. I'm really surprised.
I don't know how to respond.
I didn't even finish Jurel of Joyry, Duncan.
I did. It got better.
I know, you...
marginally.
I'm surprised that you think that I would have that. Presumably, you have that at 49.
Yes.
Okay, well, there we go. But no, I mean, my bottom choice is Jurel of Joyry. And I'll tell you this now. A demon in silver is my 49, so we're still close.
Wow, okay.
I refer to it in my notes as an abominably written collection of dry stories exclusively interested in describing the landscape over any actual activity or characters.
So, Jurel of Joyry is a collection of 6 stories by C.L. Moore, and we did not like them. Geordie only read 3 of them. I pushed my way through all 6, and the only reason I kind of put it above A Demon in Silver is I knew that I could definitely reread some of those short stories. And I think I got value in perspective on fantasy literature out of them. I learnt something, I think.
I learnt something too, and that is that people will publish anything.
A point proven by a Demon in Silver. I'm sorry, I'm sure you're a nice person, but that was a fantasy book where I just went, why have you been put out? What publisher went, of all the other things, this?
I literally got it for free, so there was not a lot of desire for it. I just got it for free on audible.com.
And if you can get it for free, don't.
Don't. It's not worth your time. Jumping up then, we both listed our 50 and our 49. Duncan, shall we then zip on up to 48? So, I'll give you my 48 to 45.
Okay.
48, I have Malice, then it's Red Nails, Sisters of Steel and Shadows, and then Shadow over Innsmouth.
I have Shadow over Innsmouth,
mm-hmm.
Malice, Sisters of Sword and Shadow, get the title right.
Oops.
And then I have Children of Virtue and and Vengeance.
Ooh, that's surprisingly low. That's pretty low.
It is low. And this book probably is technically better than some of the books above it. But this book just upset me. It's a sequel to Children of Blood and Bone, which is a legitimately great book.
Mm.
And it's much higher up this list. But I think the fact that it upset me so much by seeing such a fall from grace... Now, I kind of felt like rereading this book would cause me more emotional pain than some of the others, which might just bore me.
I wondered if you weren't going to be more charitable to Malice, because to be honest, I have warmed to Malice. I look back at it quite fondly in some ways. It's still 48 on the list, but I still smile to myself sometimes thinking about it.
No, 47, it's dull.
Woof. Would you like to take us up from 44 to 40 then?
I would love to. So, starting out at 44, The Gutter Prayer. 43, The Neverending Story.
Whoa!
42, The First Rider's Call. 41, Murtag. And 40, Twilight.
So,
just to be clear, all the books below Twilight, I would hate to reread more than Twilight.
This is really interesting because... our lists here are quite different, but not in the first and the last. 44 is also Gutter's Prayer for me. Then it's Warbreaker, Red Sister, Children of Virtue and Vengeance. Is it Virtue and Vengeance or Virtue and Violence?
It's Virtue and Vengeance, but we both wanted to call it Virtue and Violence.
I keep thinking
which
that.
I think is
and
so
then 40,
telling.
And then 40 is Twilight. I also put it at 40. I'm really interested because that was quite different between the two of us. I put Warbreaker and Red Sister. You have not mentioned them so far. And you and listed never-ending story.
The never-ending story, I was so surprised where it ended up, because I love the never-ending story. I think it's an amazing movie. And the book, in a weird way, spoiled the film for me. And that is such a betrayal of all my normal 10 years and principles.
That's fascinating. Neverending Story is... I'm not going to say where it is in my list.
But yeah, as a fantasy book, I felt like if it stopped where the movie stopped, it would be a lot higher. But in the end, it kind of just sort of soured the whole thing for me, where it ultimately went as a novel. I didn't enjoy it as much. I didn't enjoy the actual ending to the Neverending Story as I did the edited version.
In regards to The Gutter's Prayer, I mean, very interesting fact we put in the same place. My note says, I later discovered that the author is a TTRPG designer, and that made the whole book make a lot more sense. We were tricked into reading a whole book of setting flavor text.
Quite possibly. Gutter's Prayer was one of the early books that I picked that I had previously read and actually really quite liked. And I do like it. Well, I thought I liked it more than Geordie. But I was in the similar position where I couldn't say that I would reread it or recommend it more than books further up the list. It was quite weird, actually, because when I first read it, I really liked it. And I don't know if, in a weird way, Geordie, I think you opened my eyes to disliking it, which...
I think I poisoned it. That's exactly what I was thinking. I think that I whispered evil words in your ear and I soured it for you. It's like when you have a friend and then someone else tells you some really nasty gossip about them and you never see that person the same way again.
I just didn't think of it in the same context. I thought, oh, what a wonderful world you've created for me. And you were like, yeah, but the characters are flat, aren't they? Don't do anything good for the characters. The plot, oh, why would you want to read that plot? I went, okay, I don't like it as much. Geordie, you put Red Sister.
Yeah. I have controversial feelings about this book. It's almost insufferable at times. It does justify itself in the end. Like, a lot of the stuff I don't like makes sense why it's there. But still, it's not worth the time it takes to get to the good stuff.
A lot of people are not going to be happy with that. It's fair. Yeah, a lot of people like Malice, so this might, don't know where I'm
this
standing.
This might be my most controversial take. I think, I don't know. Maybe we'll have to see what's higher up on the list. I like the fact we both put Twilight as a benchmark, though, because I agree that this is where we step into the stuff, which is like, yeah, this is sort of okay beyond this point.
Yeah, I think above Twilight, I would happily reread. And to be honest, Twilight, I was the one that I went, this is sort of the worst book that I would kind of, I have to be honest with myself, I'd reread.
I have reread Twilight, not since our episode, but like I have read Twilight multiple times, and it's a very rereadable book. Like, it's approachable.
And you're not upset I put Murtagh below Twilight?
No, I understand. In fact, 39, I put The Poppy War. 38, First Rider's Call. A disappointing follow-up. 37, Revenge of the Sith. 36, A Court of Thorns and Roses. And 35, Murtagh.
Very interesting. 39, Revenge of the Sith.
Whoa,
38,
close.
Warbreaker. 37, Red Sister. 36, The Poppy War. And 35, The Silence of the Girls.
Whoa! Damn, Duncan, you're being brutal! Okay. This is interesting.
I love it how we're so similar, apart from these few picks that are like, how could you?
Now, this is interesting, isn't it? You might have been right in the previous episode where you said there will be some stuff in the middle of the pack because that's where it's going to average out. So I'm really interested in the fact that you haven't mentioned A Court of Thorns and Roses so far. I like the fact we put Revenge of the Sith in a similar place because actually this was a lot higher up the list. And then very recently, as I mentioned, I read another Star Wars book and that led me to re-listen to the audiobook for Revenge of the Sith. And rereading again, I was like, oh, this is nowhere near as good as I remember it being. And I dropped it down like 12 places.
I think that's really interesting to hear. As like a fan of Star Wars, I thought it would be higher. I genuinely thought I would want to throw this further up the pack. But it ultimately just came down to that sense of... And I really hate saying this, because I like to be the man in the corner for novelizations of films and like tie-in schlock. But I think for me, it was less revisiting other Star Wars and more being a little bit more exposed to other works by this specific author, Matthew Stover.
Mm.
He wrote a book series called The Mark of Cain.
Yep.
And being, I haven't finished the first book, but I do have a copy now. I started reading it and I really went, ah, when you've got the, you know, when you've been unleashed, when you're ready to take your own path, you have so much more to offer.
Oh,
and it's sad that that book, I think, is ultimately sci-fi, because I think I would love to bring it on the podcast.
I see.
And I think that was my perspective point. But yeah, Silence of the Girls, Geordie.
Yeah, yeah. That's surprising. I think that's quite a good book. And I thought you did as well.
I just felt like I didn't want to reread. And I feel like it also suffers by comparison.
It does suffer by comparison.
That deals with similar subject matter that I think approaches it in such a good way. Such a good way, as we'll discover later.
Which I would love to reread.
That makes Silence of the Girls just made me go, look, I enjoyed it. I would recommend it if someone said to me, oh, should I read this book? But even if someone did that, even if someone held it in their hands and went, I've heard about Troy, I want to get a new perspective, should I read Silence of the Girls? I would go, sure, but first. And I'd hand them a different book.
Yes. I want a commendation for the fact that the Poppy War made it into the top 40. I think I'm doing it some favours there. I think I have gentled my heart to it. Previously, that would have been like just above 50, but I do feel like I enjoy that book more now.
I never disliked it. I never thought it was a bad book. I know people rave for it. I enjoyed it as a fantasy experience, but particularly near the end, it just took too many turns that I was like, I don't want to continue.
Mm.
And that's ultimately the thing. The ending of Poppy War didn't make me want to read more, and it certainly doesn't want me to revisit. But I do respect a level of quality in the text.
Yeah, it has its strong parts. But you're better off reading Yellowface. Legitimately a good book, and much shorter.
Do you want to take us to the next point, Geordie?
34, Legend. 33, Berserk, the Black Swordsman arc. 32, Children of Blood and Bone. 31, Bloody Rose. And 30, Shadow Kingdom.
Very interesting. And I think this is really going to start to reveal our different tastes in literature.
Okay.
There are some similar picks, but I really can feel where we're going to have some issues. But some agreement as well. So, 34. Muse of Nightmares. Throwback to one of our earliest episodes.
Heresy!
You think that's heresy? 33. American Gods.
Ah! You...
32, Bloody Rose.
Very close.
31, and again, I'm saying this is better than all the ones previously, A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Mm.
And then finally 30, Hogfather. And that hurt me to put it there.
I understand, Duncan, I do understand.
So, Bloody Rose.
I want to jump in on one thing. I want to jump on one thing first. I've put Berserk Black Swordsman arc, and this is a point where we have to jump in, and we made a decision in putting this list together that whilst Berserk is one series, it's too long, and it's basically a series of books, you know, comic books, and we decided we would judge the series in arcs, so Conviction arc, Golden Age, and Black Swordsman arc. Even though I arbitrarily think that the Lost Mist Valley, the Valley of Lost Children is its arc, its own arc. We haven't done that for this list. We're going by official arcs.
And I'm surprised how low Black Swordsman is.
Me too,
knowing
dude.
Your absolute fandom for Berserk.
I'm a huge Berserk fan. It's one of my favourite series. Putting this list together, though, this was originally way higher, like maybe top 15. I can't quite remember. It's fallen pretty far because I've taken a really hard look at how my tastes in fantasy have changed and what I value in a fantasy novel because of this podcast. And to my surprise, Berserk, well, you'll stand to see, but it doesn't hold quite the same spots I imagined it would.
What I will say to Black Swordsman is that it's one of the few, being a comic, that I actually revisited while writing this list. And it certainly paid for me to separate out Black Swordsman from wider Berserk.
Yeah, it's a sloppy beginning.
And what actually is in that bit. Because when I first read it, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it is good. It's really good straightforward gothic horror slashing kill the bad guys manga, but it's just not as good as the rest of Berserk. It falls down the list for the same reason Bloody Rose does, which is that it doesn't live up to the rest of the series. Bloody Rose, I enjoy. I think it's a good book. I'm more inclined to defend it than some of the criticisms I've seen for it online, but it's just not as good as the original. In this case, the first book, and I'm way less likely to read it. I mean, I haven't reread it, and I've reread Kings of Wild twice.
I'm going to come and admit a little sin here, Geordie. When we redid Bloody Rose, I remember when I reread that for the episode, because it was a reread for me, I power skimmed it in places.
Whoa, really?
Because, to be fair, I previously read it only about 10 months earlier, but it did not hold my attention. Whereas when I reread the first book, I read the whole thing through.
Interesting.
And it had me.
Interesting. What else stands out here? It's interesting to me that you've put A Court of Thorns and Roses so high, Duncan.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's a very simple answer. Yeah, I liked
it. You liked it more than I did.
I know. I have a friend at work who's reading the whole series, and he's on to the third book now, and he's loving it, and he's telling me about it. And I almost don't want to read the whole series because I like the romance that's captured in the first book. And do you know what? I don't want that spoiled.
Yeah.
I just want it left there.
That's a lovely sentiment, Duncan. Yeah, you got the happy ending.
Yeah, I don't need any more. Yeah. It's over, done.
30 Hogfather, eh?
It was one of those books, and I think we talked about this episode, revisiting it. It pains me to say, it could have been shorter.
It has
one of the best endings for any Terry Pratchett Discworld book. But you know what? Getting there? Not nearly as memorable.
It's your turn to read the list next, Duncan, but I will tell you this. Number 29 on my list, Hogfather.
I'm very glad to hear it, that we're not completely out of sync.
Would you like to take us beyond, Dunk?
Number 29, Red Nails.
Okay.
Much higher than you.
Much higher.
28, Deadly Education.
Okay.
27, Berserk, The Black Swordsman. Okay. 26, Elric of Melnibone.
Interesting.
And 25, and it's lucky to be here, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Oof.
All right. So, controversial stuff here. 29, as I said, is Hogfather. 28 is Tower of the Elephant. 27 is A Deadly Education. Is that what you put it at as well?
No, mine was 28, right, so but still very close.
Yeah, that's weird, actually. For some reason, when you said that, I was like, it's not as high as mine. But no, mine's only one point higher. That's really interesting. Also quite interesting, number 26 is Weird of a White Wolf. So, and you put Elric there. And 25 for me is Assassin's Apprentice.
Very interesting. So, Geordie, Tower of the Elephant, very low. I don't like that.
I like The Tower of the Elephant, and it's extremely rereadable. I've probably read it 4 or 5 times, not including the times I've read it like as a comic book. This is something where it's very simple, and I think to a certain point it's paying for its simplicity. The other stuff on the list, by virtue of being longer, they're kind of just about more stuff. Yeah, maybe it could be higher, but I'm happy with where it is on the list.
Well, I'm not happy, but okay. Let it stand.
I find it very interesting that Deadly Education is a very similar place in our lists, where we think we both agree
that
it's
just
education. Really solid. And that's what you...
Just solid. It knew what it wanted to
and
do.
And that's what you can say for
I
it.
I think it did it really well. Yeah. It had a point, it had a message on society, and had a talking point on what it's like to be an outsider kid. Mm. And it did both in a really cool setting.
Yeah, I'll save
I want
to
read the sequel one day.
Me too, man. I definitely want to read the sequel. It's been over a year. We have put Elric of Melnibone and Weird of a White Wolf in opposite orders. I have put Weird of a White Wolf lower because The Dreaming City should be in the top 15. But the other two stories just aren't as good and they drag it down.
So I think you've hit the nail on the head while it's a bit higher for me. It's because The Weird of the White Wolf is a short story collection and it contains the short story The Dreaming City. Yeah. I couldn't do it, Geordie. I couldn't dare put The Dreaming City in any package or context low on the list.
I understand.
That is a masterclass in sword and sorcery fiction. And in many respects, if someone had never read sword and sorcery, I feel like I would put that story as a better introduction than even some of Robert E. Howard's work.
That's which high praise.
You know, I absolutely adore.
I have recently reread it very, very thoroughly, and my opinion for it only gets better and better. I love it to pieces. I rewrote it in English as part of my little hobby, and I appreciate it so much more. It's 4 chapters long, and it's fantastic. And yet, it's at number 26.
So, Jordy, what was your 25 again?
Assassin's Apprentice. That's a halfway point.
It is. Interesting halfway point.
I think that's fair for Assassin's Apprentice, because it has a bit of a... There are things holding it back and there are things holding it up. It has nice complexity and stuff, but it's also just a bit dull.
That's really interesting, Geordie, because that's the exact description I would give to my 25 place. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Noel.
Oh, yeah.
It has some things holding it back, some things holding it up, has some nice complexity, but ultimately... just a bit dull.
I disagree with that. Maybe we'll get into why I disagree with that at a later point in the episode. I'm going to jump forward to my 24. We are now very much in the very good books section, I should mind you. You know, we're in the top half, and so many of the books we've been talking about for the past 15 minutes are good books. 24 is The Worm and His Kings. Then it's 23, Elric of Menebene. 22, The Northern Lights. 21, The Never-Ending Story. And 20 is The Subtle Knife.
Okay. So much to unpack there, but I'm just going to rattle mine off as well. 24, The Amber Spyglass.
Whoa.
23, Legend, much higher than your place.
Yes.
I like to point that out. 22, Weird of the White Wolf. I'd almost recommend The Dreaming City above other works by Robert E. Howard, was my exact words. 21, Children of Blood and Bone, just a good book, and 20, Good Omens. Okay, there's quite a lot to unpack there. So, Elric Menebene, yeah, similar enough.
Yeah, very fine. Close. We basically had him backwards.
Now, Neverending Story, much higher. Geordie.
Much higher.
I told that I've never seen a movie. Film. What is this?
I've never seen a movie.
Fair.
I think that's genuinely the difference. Like, you had the first half, because the movie adapts the first half, and it has a nice, sweet, straightforward story. And then it doesn't have the second half, where it completely does a metatextual analysis of the first half, and reveals that actually it's quite a dismal, sad, depressing story. And I really liked that.
And I absolutely hated it. I felt it ruined it. And then we get some interesting ones, because you have... His Dark Materials. Two of them.
Yes.
I have one of them. All in different orders.
And you've... No, I've listed The Amber Spyglass as the best one. It's listed above the books which we have here, The Northern Lights and The Subtle Knife. I've done them in reverse order. I think The Northern Lights is an amazing book that feels very limited and incomplete in comparison to the books that come after. And I feel The Subtle Knife is not as good or complex as The Amber Spyglass.
See, this is quite interesting, because I actually feel like that works against The Amber Spyglass. It is so much more complex. It is more dense. I don't think it's as enjoyable of a reading experience, particularly when you're reading it in order. I feel by the time it gets to Amber Spyglass, it gets a bit top heavy. It has a little bit too
maybe
metatextual analysis, and it's saying too much that I think the character and the fun of the adventure gets lost.
I think maybe this is an element of you prioritizing rereadability, and I'm emphasizing emotional impact, because Amber Spyglass has by far, in my opinion, the most emotional impact in how much it makes you feel in that ending with the separation of Will and Lyra.
Oh.
Whereas The Northern Lights is by far the most rereadable, because it's quite a straightforward adventure.
And to be clear, the emotional impact of Amber Spyglass, all of these books, to be honest, all the books gone past like 30, I'm going to use the word great to describe them. It had emotional impact, and I don't want to undermine that. In fact, I actually think our reread of that trilogy through is one of my fondest memories of the It's Just Fantasy podcast. I think it was a great time to revisit something from my youth with very different eyes.
Is it my turn to take us forward?
I think it is. Next set.
19, I have Silence of the Girls. 18, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. 17, Amber Spyglass. 16, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And 15, Green Rider.
Okay. Some similarities again. 19, Assassin's Apprentice. 18, The Library at Mount Char.
Sure.
17, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. 16, Green Rider. And 15, Legends and Lattes.
Okay.
So
The Lion, Witch and Wardrobe is still to come on your list, right?
It's further up, definitely. Mm.
I feel like we're in a similar frame of mind now, because I'll just tell you that some of the ones you mentioned are coming up quite soon. So I think we are losing some of our disparity. The one now, notable exception is Silence of the Girls, which obviously you put way lower.
Yes. I am really happy that Green Rider, we got very similar. But actually, no, let's ping on Silence of the Girls. Let's stay there. Geordie, you put it a lot higher than me. I said it suffers from comparison.
And I agree. That's why it's 19. It probably should be higher. It's a very well-written book, full of beautiful prose and amazing characters.
Maybe.
But it suffers by comparison.
I feel like, of all the books that I'm looking at this list now and going, I was too mean to, I think that probably is the one where I will look back in prosperity and go, oh, Duncan, maybe you were too harsh there. But everything else, I am very much, I think, standing by. I'm really happy that we got Green Rider at the same place and so far ahead of its sequel.
Yeah, no question.
Now, Geordie, when long ago we read First Rider's Call, I said, do you want to go and scout ahead for me? Have you ever got around to doing that? Do you know what this
I've been busy. Like? I've been focusing on other stuff. No, I haven't gotten around to it. And to be honest, it is kind of because it shook some of my faith. Green Rider was so amazing that I really believe the series was just going to be hit after hit. But First Rider's Call was such a disappointment that it kind of shook a lot of my faith that the rest of the series was going to be good or ever come back to where we started with Green Rider. But I will give it a go sometime. I'll find the time to go ahead and read High Kings 2.
I'm glad to hear it. And then I guess really the only one I really want to kind of touch on now would be just to say I'm excited to see where you put the Library at Mount Char, if it goes even higher.
I'll suspend that suspense if you want to right now. It's number 14. It's the next one on my list.
Okay, fantastic.
So it's in the same ballpark.
And I just want to say, this is one of those ones where I really was there and I'm like, I almost can't critique the Library at Mount Char for what it is. I can only say that I have personal taste that runs others higher.
Sure.
It was a very different book and one of the best sort of horrors, I think, that we read, bar one. Me.
I wrote an amazing horror novel with a strong sense of style and the flow of Elmore Leonard. Its mysteries communicated excellently, always keeping you on your toes.
Do you know, I wish I wrote lovely comments about all of these instead of just slapping the book. I think I was just editing it too much. I was like, nah.
Do you know, I had to justify them to myself. I had to know that laced down the line, I could give a reason. Like, for example, we skimmed over this. Legend. Legend's a great book. Weighed down by one boring subplot and a heaping of misogyny. If it just either had zero female characters and therefore was misogynistic by exception, instead of having one really uncomfortably misogynistic character, I would put that book a lot higher.
That's nice to hear. I think so. Yeah. No, I think I can definitely see that. And for me, obviously, I think it runs just more to the tastes of the sword and sorcery elements. I'm just like, this is something I've been looking out for. But you're right. Even on my list, it came in at 23. And I do feel like if it just had those edits made, it could be maybe not top 10. But I think it could have jumped 10 places, like in a flash.
Duncan, would you like to take us on?
Okay, here we go. We're getting close now. 14. Berserk, Conviction and Lost Children, or the Conviction arc.
Sure.
13, The Worm and His Kings.
Very high.
12, Shadow Kingdom, followed very quickly by 11, Tower of the Elephant. And then finally, 10, Strange the Dreamer.
Okay, cool. Interesting. For me, it's 14, The Library at Mount Char.
Nice.
13, American Gods, Undisputed Masterpiece. 12, Legends and Lattes. Not far off yours. 11, the Black Tongue Thief, and 10, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
So I think there are two picks there that obviously really highly contrast where I put them, and we need to talk about that.
American Gods?
American Gods and Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Similar books in that they are very long and have big, sprawling narratives, which I enjoy and you apparently dislike.
And yeah, and that's kind of surprising going into just into Is This Just Fantasy podcast as a concept, because I always thought I was the one for reading the big tomes and the Game of Thrones and the Wheel of Time. But I've actually found myself being more attracted to maybe the sort of the shorter, punchier reads. And I'm not going to lie, the fact that the question that I had in
at
my...
At your core, Duncan, you are a pulp historian.
Thank you, I am. You're right, I like punchy. I like... I call it efficiency, is how I describe it to myself. Stories that know what they're about and give you just enough of the world and the character and even the plot to deliver that emotional impact, be it excitement or horror, and then leave you because you've got other things to do in your day, like unblock the dishwasher.
Whereas I like indulgence. I like books that just are about the things the author likes. There's a wonderful sentiment, which I've never forgotten, whilst listening to. I have a visceral memory of this. It is extremely tangible. I'm sitting in a truck in Georgia. The year is 2018. It's late July. My girlfriend is having a nap in the seat next to me, and I'm listening to the end of Stardust by Neil Gaiman, and I get to his author's notes, and he explains that in books like Coraline, which are like not long, like 19,000, I forget which, pages, words long, he says, I can justify every word in that book. It's so trimmed and so precise for a children audience. But with something like American Gods, there are some words in there that are just in there because I like them. And that's what I like about American Gods.
It's... And I don't want to say that I didn't enjoy it. Because I did when it got there. I just... For the same exact same opposite reason. It's like, when it was indulgent and when it was just going on a bit, I felt the slog. I felt like it was slipping into work. And although I could appreciate its quality, all the way up until he had sex with the cat, it just wasn't there for me.
Yeah.
Was that too indulgent?
I mean,
that scene.
It wouldn't be a Neil Gaiman book if it wasn't a weird sex scene in there.
I think that's quite fair.
Number 9, Duncan. I said this was heresy. Where did you put Muse of Nightmares? For me, it's number 9.
Oh, God. So this might be our biggest difference. Let me. I have to go right back down the bottom. 34.
34! Oh, heresy. Anyway, 8 is Good Omens. 7, Berserk, The Golden Age. 6, Berserk, The Conviction Arc. That's controversial. I'm sure people would be mad at me online for that. And then after that, it's our top 5.
Okay, Geordie, I'm going to rattle through these then. So, 9, The Northern Lights. 8, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. 7, A Wizard of Ursi, and 6, The Black Tongue Thief, which I think I've put quite a bit ahead of you.
Oh, not that far. I got it at 11.
Okay, fair enough. I now have so much of a better idea of what your top 5 are.
I mean, yeah, it's a process of elimination, isn't it? I think people are going to be mad at me for putting the Conviction Arc ahead of the Golden Age, even if it's
yes,
just
one. Yes, I am.
You're mad at me.
A little bit. I knew this was happening because you told me when we reviewed them, sure, you know, going back all those many months and years, but I still don't see it. I read the Conviction Arc, and do you know what, Geordie? If you had let me split up, like, The Lost Children in the Valley of the Mist and the second half of the Conviction Arc, The Lost Children would have gone higher.
Sure.
I don't like the whole... That whole... I didn't enjoy it as much. It was...
I understand. I get it. I will tell you why. The Golden Age is undisputably a masterpiece of fantasy. There's a reason why it's the part of Berserk. It's been adapted, like, so many times. And yet, I love the Conviction Arc. Because I think that is where we get into the core of what Berserk is. The Golden Age is a wonderful story of betrayal and trying to find meaning in your life. But conviction is where the rubber meets the road. It's about the conviction. It's about redemption. And no matter how far you fall, you get back up and you keep trying to be a good person. It's about finding what really matters for you in life and fighting for it. And this is where the chief criteria for what makes this book makes a book important to me comes in. The emotional resonance it has. Because the conviction arc has been an actual source of strength for me in hard times. I have looked to it and I've tightened my jaw and I thought about it and I've toughed it out because I think about that part of the story.
It's so hard because the emotional key points in the conviction arc, where the character Guts, a protagonist, makes his conviction to prioritize protecting those he loves over acts of vengeance, is beautiful and strong and resonant. I just feel like that is a strong point in what is a generally weaker arc with sort of what I'm going to describe as mini boss villains.
I understand.
You know, characters you look at and you go, you're not the big honcho, you're just here to fill page space until he shows back up.
I understand. Also, some people don't like Isidro. I think he's okay.
Oh, I love Isidro.
Oh, good. I'm glad we agree on that.
I'm going on the same page as that one, though.
Muse of
Nightmares. Introduced some great new characters. I want to take this moment, before we go any further, just to defend my low placement of Muse of Nightmares.
Sure, I'm okay.
Because I didn't do it at the time, we kind of glossed over. Muse of Nightmares.
Heresy.
Oh, Georgie, I think you will. I would say go back and listen to the episode, but it's one of very old ones, and my audio quality is atrocious.
No, so I don't think it's a good episode. You can skip that one. Don't listen to anything before Elric of Mernebene. That's the first good one.
But Muse of Nightmares, to me, Strange the Dreamer, which I put in at number 10, and I love that book. It's amazing. It has a great romantic subplot. And it poses a question box. So many questions about the world. And I felt like in the sequel, Muse of Nightmares, we got answers. And I don't think I enjoyed them as much as I enjoyed the questions. And
that's understandable.
We got less of the core, because a lot of actions going down and characters are separated. There's tension and, you know, the two romantic couple, they're not spending that actual time together that I enjoyed watching. I liked watching the romantic couple in that series, Geology, like fall in love. So when in the second book, they're just not together as much, or at least don't have the same romantic scenes together, I found that less enjoyable. It was the end of the story. But I almost look at it and go, if Muse of Nightmares had been squashed down to a fifth of the length and just popped on the end of Strange the Dreamer, it would have been good. I've been happy.
I think you have to enjoy what is independent about the Muse of Nightmares to keep it as high up the list as I have. You have to like the revenge story and the story about being lost in grief and darkness. You have to enjoy that on its own right to hold it as high up the list as I do. And I just happen to still like that stuff, in addition to what I like about Stranger Dreamer. Which, by the way, hasn't been mentioned in the list yet. I wonder why.
I wonder why, too. So, Jordy, I think we're getting into our top five. We're going to take these one at a time. And I can't wait to really dive in here.
All right. With that, now it's time to enter the top five. Duncan, would you like to go first?
Oh, I will. I'm really kind of anxious now, in a way, because it's like, I sort of know, by process elimination, like what you have, and the fact that we're kind of so much more different at the top than I ever thought we would be. So here we go. Number five, Best Served Cold by Joe Abercrombie.
Number five for me, Best Served Cold by Joe Abercrombie. Perfect alignment. We did it.
Okay, we're not that different then. Clearly much more interesting than I thought.
Yeah,
it's a great book.
It is a great book. I think this is a deserving place for it because in terms of like artifice, in terms of the way it's put together, it's really well done. It's a really good book. It has so much stuff going for it. It's really enjoyable to read. But it can't really take the absolute top spots, because I wouldn't say that it had much of an emotional impact on me. Like, I had a blast reading it, but it's not like a life-changing experience, you know? It's not something I really go back to and I think about a lot.
See, coming at it from this angle of, like, rereadability, you know, how much do I want to dive back into Best Served Cold? Firstly, it's sort of disadvantaged in this list, because we reviewed it so recently. Please go back and give a listen.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, I think it kind of knocked down. Also, I feel like this might be a book, kind of going off what you just said, as the years go by, I will always look back on it fondly, but I'm not going to have that same drive to be like, I need to go on that journey again with those characters.
I agree.
I'll recommend the hell out of it, but will I need it? Will I, like, have that desire?
I'm totally with you. I'm happy that in our top five, we've begun in the same place, because I don't think, I mean, it's maybe that we could line up again. I'm not sure. Let's find out. I'll do my number four.
Okay.
My number four, Kings of the Wild.
My number four, The Subtle Knife.
Oh, now this is going to be a difference, because I already got rid of The Subtle Knife a long time ago and I put it below The Amber Spyglass.
You did, and I was very confused. So there's a bit behind this. I do think this book has some emotional baggage that's helping drive it forward. Firstly, it was the first of the Northern Light books I actually read. Go back, listen to our episode. I didn't read Northern Lights first. I watched the movie, read Subtle Knife, got confused, yes, but fell in love anyway.
That's true. And
this was the book that, as a, like, a kid, though, I think it was the one that introduced me to that, like, next level. Whatever His Dark Materials is pushing for, this is the book that got me thinking those ideas. Ideas about faith and the structure of the church and morality and all those. And yeah, even parallel universes. I think I was really, this is one of the early experiences. So I was like, oh, wow, this is a cool concept.
Yeah. And that, the fact that it is the introduction to those ideas, is precisely why I placed it below Amber Spyglass. Because whilst this is the first book to, like, start to address them, Amber Spyglass is where it kind of delivers, you know, where it goes whole hog and, you know, they attack and dethrone and kill God.
And I do appreciate that. And I think this is, again, but Amber Spyglass is so much harder for me to kind of, like, jump back into. It is the end of the trilogy. I feel like I would have to build up to it, and it's a lot of ideas, whereas Subtle Knife has just enough sort of loose adventure to it still, kind of the middle ground between Northern Lights and Amber Spyglass. I think in that middle ground, I get the best of the two.
And because it's the start of Will's journey, it's easier to latch on at that point than, say, with Amber Spyglass, where you're in the middle of the story, and it really wouldn't make any sense. You'd have no idea what was happening if you jumped in there.
But Geordie, Kings of the Wild, you put it here, I put it higher.
So you have. I noticed that, because I'd noticed you hadn't brought it up yet. I think this is a deserving place for it. I mean, it's in the top five. It's a great place to be.
It's not an insult, is it? It's hardly like a diss. But why here? I guess in many respects, Jordy, I always want to ask you why you think the books you put above it deserve to be there.
Well,
but, yeah,
we can get to that there. But yeah, I love Kings of the Wild. Very funny. It's got exciting, really well-written action, like surprisingly well-written. But most of all, it places this highly because of heart. This book has so much heart. In the Etin brothers characters, in the relationships between parents and children, in the companionship between friends, and the lengths people go to do each other. And I love it. It's such a warm hug. And, you know, if I was scoring this in terms of rereadability, this would probably be higher up the list. Because all of the books above it are books I have read numerous times before. And I've read this one numerous times too. I've probably read it through 2.5 times, like one full read through and then, like, jumping around for my favorite bits. I've gone back and I've listened to Gabe's big speech at the end, like, just on a whim. I've opened up the audiobook and I've gone to that chapter just to listen to it, because it's such a good listen.
It's that kind of I don't know if you ever do, maybe this is just a me thing, it probably isn't a me thing given the views on YouTube, but, like, do you ever get this moment where you just need to watch Theoden's speech before the charge of the Rohirrim? Like, you just need to see that clip.
We've brought it up before that sometimes I will watch the Wee Happy Few speech from Henry V at the gym to get pumped.
I really want this idea that like Kings of the Wild could be such an excellent like gym book. like, come on, lads, let's do this together.
I think it's a fine spot for it. I mean, anything that's this high up is it's scoring pretty well.
But what's better than it, Georgie, in your mind?
Number three for me, Song of Achilles.
Number three for me, Berserk, Golden Age.
Wow. Now, this is really interesting is you, because I'm the big Berserk fanboy. Like, I consider it, like, I've called it before my favorite fantasy series. And it capped out at number six. Like, it's been beaten by a fair few things. You're the one who scored it really high.
I suppose why I did this is because, again, I have revisited this arc. It was my introduction to Berserk. I watched the anime. That's what I thought Berserk was.
Mm.
And even though we've read beyond it, and we read The Black Swordsman, I can see myself wanting to just read The Golden Age. Just again, I just want to go back again and see Guts, our main character, have his growth over that arc. It's such a beautiful bit of character development.
Mm-hmm.
And there are moments of nuance, there are moments of sadness, there are moments of like joy. It has all of like those emotional key points where I'm like, yes, I need to see Guts here. And then see him here, and then see him here. And it does point out, it's quite a long arc. So,
it is.
A lot of content.
Long.
Griffith is an amazing villain. And he is the best of the Berserk I've read so far. He is best in this arc. What a conniving arsehole. What a beautiful conniving arsehole.
You'll hear me make no arguments on this account. Even though I did place it below Conviction Arc, I mean, that's a controversial move on my part, because there's so many parts of this I love. It is, like, a complete package. You can read from, you can skip the Black Swordsman Arc, start at the beginning of the Golden Age, and finish with He Who Fights Dragons, and be happy with the story that was told. You know, that's a complete package. The story could be over there. And we're privileged enough that it kept going. The only reason that I scored it below Conviction Arc, even though I love it, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't need to be there. You know, when you watch the different anime adaptations, it's obvious how much stuff they chop out. Because, you know, the assassins, wilds, the black dogs, there's a lot of stuff you didn't need to have in there.
And that is true. And to be quite honest, when I'm thinking back to it, I am sort of brushing over those moments in my mind. Like, you've just mentioned the black dogs. I've gone, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that does happen. Oh, there's that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe on a reread, that would hamper me and make me go, oh. Flick, 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 flick. Okay, I'm happy again.
Mm-hmm.
That's me flicking the pages, by the way. You know, just, like, flicking at the book on my tablet. So, I get you. But I think it's the best of Berserk. Because it's a standalone, because it's everything, and it's the heart of Berserk. Berserk needs to work by having the Golden Age to give you why you care throughout the rest of it.
That's very
if
true.
Guts and Kaska do not have their relationship in the Golden Age, what does the rest of it matter? You want to return to that status quo for the characters, say status quo. That point of happiness. It lets you know what you're missing.
Mm.
Beautiful piece. Talking about missing things and heart and happiness, Song of Achilles, Geordie.
Yeah, yeah. Song of Achilles is a really fucking good book. In like, right before the recording of this episode, I actually doubted this position because I was hanging out with my girlfriend and she's currently rereading Song of Achilles on her audiobook, and she happened to put it on without her headphones and just played it out loud. And I thought to myself, wow. I forgot just how good this book is. Like, the prose is just so beautiful.
It is almost kind of poetic. And there's something that I kind of even give to Strange the Dreamer, although it's a lot further down in my list. Like, there's some books that are written like Best Served Cold. Bernard Cornwell's a great example. You know, they're not always too flowery in their prose. You know, they're direct, you've got the action, it makes it kind of a gritty realism. And that helps you connect to the characters. This isn't one of those books. This gets you connected because you really feel that kind of abstract, more emotional level. You see, it's kind of painted in that kind of mythological light. You know, it's a watercolours painting. It's not a photograph of the Trojan War.
Often when I read stuff, I almost feel sometimes envious sometimes. Like, oh, I wish I could write like this. And it takes stories like Best Served Cold being compared to the Song of Achilles to go, these are written in such a different way, and they're both so good for different reasons. And there really is just this huge range in the way in which we can write stories to engage with people and to capture people's imaginations, where there is no secret ingredient that just upgrades a book and makes it work. Song of Achilles works in ways that would ruin Best Served Cold, just like that book is written in the way it does because it complements itself. And it just so happens that Song of Achilles, in the beautiful way you see through Patroclus' eyes, and he paints this image of a Trojan War trying to highlight the beauty and goodness of Achilles instead of just like the killing machine which mythology turns him into. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It captures your heart.
I think it's really good to bring up at this moment, because it's something that we alluded to earlier, where I put Silence of the Girls quite low down my list, and I said, It's a great book, it's just so unfortunate it falls in the shadow of another book that also just says subject matter. And obviously, Song of Achilles is that book, and it's really weird to have something like Silence of the Girls and be like, this is good, this is better.
It is. It just is. You know, as much as I was just saying, like, oh, you can't compare some books, you can't compare Best Served Cold and Song of Achilles, but Silence of the Girls is just similar enough, and it's just too different to compare to something like Song of Achilles, which is just, it's elemental. It's elemental.
Can I give you my number two?
Ready when you are.
Song of Achilles.
And there we have it.
It's an incredible book. Loved it so much, and I'm fascinated to know what two books. In fact, I sound fascinated. I know what they are. I just don't know what order.
Exactly. So this is the last drum roll. I know what your last book is, and that's interesting. It's an interesting choice. My penultimate book is A Wizard of Earthsea. It was hard to decide between this and Song of Achilles. I think that the only reason it wins out is that I feel a stronger personal attachment to Geb than I do to Patroclus, because I can apply a lot more about that, the earnestness of Ursula K. Le Guin's writing and the profundity in her belief in the goodness of people and how that is interesting, just as interesting as evil. And the challenge to be a good person, but how it's a noble thing to pursue. Ah, it's a beautiful book. And there's just something about the way it's written that it melts into your brain. Song of Achilles is enjoyable and emotional, but A Wizard of Earthsea just flows by, and it's over before you know it because you'll just get carried away in its gentle currents.
And I almost feel a bit bad having put it so much lower down the list. I think it's down in like number 7th place for me. And it's, again, nothing's wrong. Everything you said about it, I agree. And the moral messaging in this book, to have a character that doesn't just preach, but like fully embodies the moral message of like a pacifist.
It's
incredible to see. And something that you don't see a lot in fantasy literature at all. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that kind of pulls it back for me is that I'm a bit more basic, Geordie. And I like a rip-roaring, fun, adventurous ride. And this isn't it. This is trying to be something, in many respects, higher or better or just so different, it doesn't invite comparison. And while I absolutely love Wizard of Earthsea, I can't comprehend a world where I'm reading multiple Wizard of Earthseas, where these are the types of books that I'm going one to the other.
You should read multiple Wizard of Earthseas. The next book's really good.
To be pretty honest, I probably should. And I have the big compendium sat on my shelf and have only read the first book in it.
The Tombs of Artuan.
I don't know why, because it's so good.
Tombs of Artuan's like even shorter than the first book. It's brief. It's over with quickly, but it's really good. That brings us to the number one slot. And by process of elimination, we both know what our number ones are. So I guess now we're kind of fighting for the top spot.
I guess so. Geordie, do you want to say each other's?
Yes, I guess so. Duncan, your number one pick is Kings of the Wild.
It is. And Geordie, your number one pick is Strange the Dreamer.
And I don't think there should be any surprise there, because if you go back to that episode where we review it, I'm pretty confident that I said this is my favorite fantasy story, and it's not going to be beaten anytime soon. I had to think long and hard, am I being biased towards this book? Maybe, but I do think it is just this good.
A few things here. I think it's really telling that The Song of Achilles, if I'm not mistaken, is the only book we both read for the first time on this podcast. Song of Achilles is, for both of us, the highest ranking book that we read for the first time together.
That sounds right, yes. In the early days of the podcast in particular, we were kind of doing a lot of, I've read this before and I want to introduce the other person to this. But these days, I think we're much more likely to just pick books that neither of us have read, but we're both interested in.
And so I really think there should be credit given there to a book. Like, that's like an extra, like, I don't know, not a star, a merit on it for being the one that with the least, like, emotional history got the highest for both.
That's true. So. There's no nostalgia factor there. It's good just because it's good. And it didn't get chosen because we knew we already liked it.
Strange the Dreamer. I mean, I loved it. And I feel kind of bad for it, Geordie, because I genuinely think, in a way, if it wasn't for Muse of Nightmares, it might have crawled itself further up my list.
That's weird, because Muse of Nightmares is not a bad book.
I just don't think I enjoyed it nearly as much as the first, and that leaves Strange the Dreamer, for me, dangling a little, because Strange the Dreamer doesn't work as well as a standalone, despite being Kings of the Wild, also part of a series, but works on its own. Because Strange the Dreamer, I feel, always leaves you with, like, you gotta read this part too.
It does have the craziest cliffhanger ever. Like, it's the only time in the history of the podcast where the other person's gone, well, I have to read what happens next.
And I had to, because it's such a good cliffhanger. And I feel bad that I didn't like the answers as much of the questions that Strange the Dreamer sets up. And that shouldn't bring down Strange the Dreamer. It shouldn't, but it did. And that, I feel bad for that. But Geordie, tell us again, why is Strange the Dreamer amazing?
Well, Strange the Dreamer, much like Song of Achilles, is a beautifully written book. You know, just the prose itself, it's so rich and velvety and wonderful to experience just hearing these descriptions of, say, just walking down the street, the image of liveliness or the way it places you in the scene, it feels so warm and inviting. And the characters as well are so rich and wonderful, with a profound sense of history. The book grapples with these really dark topics, but in a really delicate way, which no other author has really managed to do, in my opinion, with nowhere near the same level of grace. And at the core of it, there's this wonderful love story, which we were both so entranced by individually in reading it.
I really want to say that, like, what Leanna Taylor does in terms of her prose, I gave this book to my younger sister, one of the few books or not they've read on our podcast, that I had to go to my sister and be like, you need to try and read this. Like, this is incredible. And it really broke my heart when she gave it back and she went, listen, I'm sure it's a great book, but the prose are just too poetic for me. I'm glad that you love it. And that was always a bit of agony, but
I'm shaking my head. Tangent. I look genuinely peeved right now. Too poetic.
I know. What a criticism. It reminds me of the time I didn't get a job because they said I was too analytical.
Yeah.
It's like, mate, I'm in engineering. What do you want? Anyway, so that was a great thing. And you talked about the romance. This romance sits right alongside Will and Lyra for me. In fact, I think if I read this book first, before I read His Dark Materials, I think it would, in a weird way, kind of like rank higher, because I always see Will and Lyra as that my most like favourite, like, young love story, people falling in love for the first time.
Mm.
But there's nothing I could really say that the love story in Strange the Dreamer isn't as good as or better. I just came to it later in life.
It stands up for me. I thought long and hard about whether anything else could take it out of a top spot. You know, to begin with, when I started putting this list together, it was fighting for the top spot with Berserk, the Golden Age, and then everything else was behind it. But the more and more I thought about it, the lower Berserk went down the list and the higher up new books went. But at the end of the day, this is still my favorite book. I have read it through like 4 or 5 times, and I will do it again in the future. And I like Muse of Nightmares. I like the answers we get to the mysteries. So it is still my number one spot. But I have argued for my top spot. Duncan, it's your turn. Why is Kings of the Wild the best book we've read in a podcast?
Okay, this is hard for me because so many of these books were such high quality, and I think it really says a lot about what my requirements were when I kind of made this list. Every book I kind of put up against the book above it and went, what one would I rather reread right now? And Kings of the Wild just kept working its way up. And when we did our episode, and when we did our great interview with Nicholas Eames, so happy the guy gave us his time, amazing author, I think I explained myself really poorly because I just felt like I kept saying the same word over and over again, which doesn't help anyone. I just kept saying it's fun. It's really fun. Just fun.
And it is fun.
But that's what it is. This, to me, is what fantasy is and can be in the vein that I most enjoy it. It has the go-getter adventure of like pulp and the directness and the action scenes, but it's more modern. It's not mirrored by sort of the views of the time, which can affect your enjoyment in something like That's Conan true. Or Legend. It has the heart that I look for in other books like Song of Achilles and Strange Dreamer. And although it's not like a direct romance, the different relationship, the sort of the father-daughter, you know, you feel for these guys. And also the brotherly love.
Absolutely.
Love a bit of brotherly love.
I was just thinking when you were talking about heart, the scene where, you know, they're about to begin the battle of the bands and all of them gather up and they all sincerely get together and Moog goes, I love you guys. And they all have a big group hug. It's so beautiful. And you don't see a lot of scenes like that, you know, of the gruff, tough men in these books sincerely say, I love you to one another.
Almost to me invokes Lord of the Rings, big granddaddy of high fantasy, incredible books. And so many books try and like, are in its shadow, in its mold. I'm thinking like, you know, your Wheel of Tides, your Mazalans, and all of that. But one of the things I really like about Lord of the Rings when you read it is the relationship between our core fellowship. And obviously, you know, that is a fellowship that is all, you know, men. And I like the fact that it doesn't shy away from the fact when Sam is looking down at Frodo and they, you know, they do love each other. They it's genuine. It's a platonic love, but it's there and it's love nonetheless. Yeah. And I don't think I often get that vibe again. You know, when I read Wheel of Time, yeah, it's a group of lads, but they're all about pairing off with a love interest. You know, there's all that element. Whereas I just like the fact that these guys can come to and just be honest and you really feel what they've gone through.
Yeah, Sam and Frodo hold hands whilst walking through Mordor.
And then on top of that, he gets the other bit of fantasy that I love, which is it slums it down to that D&D, we're just here to have a good time.
Yeah, the tagline of the second book is girls just want to have fun.
And ultimately, why do I do this as a hobby? And I kind of maybe have this a lot with my partner when we talk about like TV shows. And she's like, Duncan, do you not want to come and watch this intense drama with Richard Armitage? And I go, no. She's like, why not? I'm like, because I have enough stress and tense emotions during the day. I just want to have fun in my evenings. And that's why I come and do fantasy, to just have a bit of fun. And this book delivers
so much. There's a lot of fun. There's a terribly sad scene involving Gregor the Ettin. There's a scene where people fall up and down cliffs and you think they're doomed. But there's also kung fu fights with monks and one-winged angels. And their final scene is composed to Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
And there's nothing I would rather reread right now than Kings of the Wild.
Duncan, that was your number one pick, and I've given my number one pick, but we are a joint podcast, and something we discussed is that we now need to make the official podcast ranking. So, using a spreadsheet we made earlier, you and I put our answers, or, you know, the order in which we ranked our books, into a hidden columns on a spreadsheet, and then we made a formula to average it out. And now, neither of us have seen this before. We're going to find out what is the best book according to a rank system.
Now, I understand that this technically means we could get like 8 28s, but I think we'll puzzle it down.
All right, so at the very bottom, in joint last place, we have Demon in Silver, and Jurel of Joyry.
Where they should be.
Yes.
Next up, Malice.
Then we have another joint at 46 and 47, Shadow over Innsmouth and Sisters of Sword and Shadows. I almost said Steel. I almost got it wrong again.
Next up, Gutter's Prayer.
And then at 44, Children of Virtue and Vengeance.
Following on from that, Warbreaker. Very low. Was not expecting it.
Sorry, Brando. Next up at 42 is Twilight.
Official, Twilight is better than Warbreaker. And following on from Twilight, First Rider's Cool.
Actually ranked in the same place.
I would give First Rider's Cool just slightly the edge. That's a lie, it's Twilight all the way.
Then it's Red Sister.
Next one, all in a line. Revenge of the Sith, Red Nails, and Murtagh.
All ranked around 39 to 37. And then it's followed up from that, we have Poppy War.
Followed on by Court of Thorns and Roses.
The Never-Ending Stories next.
Dragged Down by Me. Also Dragged Down by Me, Bloody Rose.
Then Berserk, the Black Swordsman arc, around 32.
Following on with number 31, we have Hogfather.
Then we have Legend.
Followed by Deadly Education.
Silence of the Girls.
Children of Blood and Bone.
Dragged Down by Me this time. Followed up, Elric of Melniboné.
Followed up immediately by Weird with the White
Wolf.
Very
appropriate.
I'm happy they're together.
American Gods.
Dragged Down by Me. Assassin's Apprentice, middle of the pack, and I think fair.
Just beating it out by half a point is Muse of Nightmares at 22.
Strongly disagree. Assassin's Apprentice is definitely better. But beating out Muse of Nightmares, at least we have Shadow Kingdom.
Yes, which I tried to assassinate and you ranked very highly. Then, Amber Spyglass by Philip Pullman.
Followed on by Tower of the Elephant by Robert E. Howard.
The Worm and His Kings comes in at number 18.
Very respectable position, but just beaten out by Percy Jackson. And Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell on the same footing, 17.5 points.
This is really interesting because if you look at the scoring for this, Percy Jackson got this with an 18 and a 17, but Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell got it with a number 10 and a 25. So extremely different ranks and made it bring ended up in the same place.
What can I say? I just don't get it.
And you never will. Next up, we have the Library at Mount Char at number 15.
And in a joint position, Northern Lights and Green Rider. Very good pair.
A very good pair.
To be inside, I actually think. I'd recommend them on equal footing for a young reader.
Next up is Good Omens.
I'm quite taken aback by that. That you really liked it, so who am I to disagree? Followed by Legends and Lattes.
Another divisive one is the Subtle Knife. I ranked it below Amber Spyglass. You gave it your number 5 slot.
Excellent book. Followed on by The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. This one, a bit more similar.
Berserk, the Conviction arc.
It's still pretty good. I had some bad things to say about it, but it's still Berserk. But that was beaten out by The Black Tongue Thief.
Next up.
Bear Dark Fantasy.
Next up. My top spot, Strange the Dreamer, comes in at number 6.
I kind of feel bad about
that.
That's
the power of averages.
I'll get over it because it's just beaten by some amazing works, including Berserk, The Golden Age, at number 5.
And the top 4 spots are not all tied, but the second place and the first place are all tied up. Best Served Cold and The Wizard of Earthsea are fighting for runner-up.
I mean, two very different books.
Very different books. Completely opposite philosophies, in fact.
The ultimate pacifist book and just Ride the Wave of Violence book. Beautiful. And finally, in joint first place, and I'm not going to lie, Geordie, I am a little smug about this. Because this is my number 2 and my number 1.
That's right. I think you have kind of won this argument.
Song of Achilles and Kings of the Wild. Two beautiful, beautiful books. And if you read anything that we have recommended, be it one of them.
I mean, that's actually really true. Like, of the top books we have, Kings of the Wild, Song of Achilles, and A Wizard of Earthsea are books I would basically recommend to just about anyone who enjoys fantasy. Best Served Cold is on the more dark and violent end, so I'd be more selective about that. But as other ones, I'm like, yeah, this is a pretty solid recommendation to just about anybody who likes a fantasy novel.
And I think it shows a real good kind of spread. Kings of the Wild is very contemporary in terms of its ideals and its sort of fantasy setting. It's about modern fantasy and modern, I say modern rock music, last 40 years, what have you. Song of Achilles is about the myths, it's the distant past of fantasy, yet again, with such a beautiful modern lens on this historic romance. Historic. Legendary mythological romance. I'm not going to call Troy historic. And then A Wizard of Earthsea, which is, in my mind, timeless.
Yeah.
It's a timeless tale.
Foundational work of fantasy.
It's beautiful. And I probably should have put it higher on my list.
But there's no time for regrets. We will have to revisit this in 2 years' time for our top 100.
And if you want to see that all broken down in a much easier way...
Yeah, I'll definitely put something up on the Instagram. Make a tier list. Make a little slideshow.
When you are thinking, how dare they, how could they, go to Instagram, put a comment there and tell us where you think we went horrifically wrong. And if you enjoy hearing about any of those books and you want to hear them in more depth, well, guess what? Each one of them have their own episode available. Go out, seek them, enjoy them.
The next issues, you know, the next published issues of Kings of Wild and Song of Achilles better have a little stamp in it that says, approved by Is This Just Fantasy?
Won't those be the days? But, Geordie, do you know what kind of almost upsets me a little bit?
What was it, Duncan?
That 50 books? I felt like we've read more than that.
Technically speaking, we have. Are you making fun of me because of Ursula K. Le Guin again?
No. I'm thinking about that to our early days.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, of course.
We read the whole way through and we recorded the best episode up to that point. It couldn't be on the list because it's not a released episode.
Yeah, we...
Then the rules.
The rules. Yeah, we did record an episode which we then immediately lost, and it was our best episode up to that point.
We did an episode on Empire of the Vampire.
By Jay Kristoff.
Does it deserve its time in the sun, Geordie? It's got a sequel out.
It does indeed. We read that book 2 years ago, the sequel has released, and we want to review the sequel because we really liked the first book, and I want to find out what happens, but...
It feels a bit weird, though. You know, I feel like we need to at least get our thoughts on the first book out. We need to revisit it in some way. But
it
would
be
Jordan,
very
long
weird
books.
To do a review where we would have to catch up the audience on a lot of stuff just before we even manage to even talk about it. So I think we should do just that. Duncan, are you prepared to reread the entirety of Empire to Vampire with me?
No.
Darn.
Really long.
It is long. And it's basically two books in one.
It is, and if I want to read that sequel in a timely manner, I think I need to just get into it.
So, with that in mind, Duncan, I will do you this favour. I am in the process right now of rereading Empire of the Vampire to prepare for Empire of the Damned, and so, last year, I think it was, we did an episode, it was supposed to be like the first part of a series, it never really came to fruition, but it's having its follow-up episode now, once per year... Lore dump, where one of us recites the plot of a book to the other one so the other person doesn't have to read it. Normally that's just so I don't have to read a Star Wars novel, but this time, I'm going to do you a favor. I am going to reread Empire to Vampire for you and catch you and the readers up to speed for our episode on Empire of the Damned.
Thank you so much for taking on this burden, Geordie. I remember French words and
yes.
And particularly interesting drawings of underage people.
Underage people who do look they're about 35 years old.
I'm excited to be brought up to speed so that I can just focus in on that sequel. Just get this train moving.
I will get up to speed. I'll crack on, finish the book, and I'll let you know all about it. Next time on Is This Just Fantasy? I've been your host, Geordie Bailey.
And I've been your other host, Duncan Nicol.
See you next time.
Till then.
Au revoir.
Bye.